Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Loopcast. Today we have a very fun show. I'm just going to put that out there. It's different than our usual format because we have multiple guests and multiple participants. So we are doing a show with our friends at Divergent Options, and they're a fantastic resource for information on various topics. And we have some of the Divergent Options team with us, and they'll explain more. And then my co-producer, Sina, is also going to be a part of the show because both Sina and I have written for this great site and this great resource. So once again, if you haven't listened to the Loopcast, I'm Chelsea Damon, and I'm going to pass it over to my co-producer right now as well.
Hey, how's it going? This is Sina. I'm sure some of you have heard of me. And so today we wanted to do a show on, as Chelsea said, Divergent Options. Part of this was, I think, it's frankly one of my favorite sort of NATSEC, national security and security blogs or publications, depending. I don't know what word the kids are using now, but it was definitely something that I think we needed to draw more attention to and to sort of have a long form discussion about. I think Loopcast's goals are, as you guys know, it's, you know, dedicating ourselves to sort of bringing more attention and educating people about, you know, certain national security issues, but also I think post 2016, our show has become sort of, you know, a fact-based, you know, popular podcast. You know, we try not to express an opinion, rather just let somebody talk, let them have their viewpoint, and sort of you make the decision as the listener, which I think our friends at Divergent Options, as you'll hear, you know, almost have the same viewpoint and the same sort of philosophy. So we really wanted to just bring them on, you know, have this conversation, and hopefully when you stop listening to the podcast, you'll go, you know, read, you know, what's been published on Divergent Options. It's really top notch. So here we go.
Yeah, so why don't we do this? I'm going to have each of our guests introduce themselves and give our listeners a mini bio about themselves because, like I said, we've got three guests from Divergent Options. So one of them is a reoccurring guest on the Loopcast, and that's Phil Walter. So why don't you start off with telling us who you are, Phil?
Thank you so much, Chelsea. My name is Phil Walter. I have served in the military, both as enlisted and officer, both active duty and reserves. I've served in the intelligence community, and I've served on interagency assignment. And along with Steve Leonard and Bob Hine, I am fortunate enough to run divergentoptions.org.
And I'll let our next guest introduce themselves, either Steve or Bob, whoever wants to go first.
Bob, why don't you? Okay,
fair enough. So I'm Bob Hine. I'm a 30-year surface warfare officer in the Navy. I retired from the Navy about 10 days ago, and my last job was as the Deputy Director of Strategy for the Navy. I started writing, you know, I was one of those guys throughout my whole career, and I know you guys can appreciate this. It was like, all the time, there was like, someday I want to write an article about this, but I don't have time. And then I got an opportunity to work at Brookings Institution for a year. I started writing, and I met Phil through the Military Writers Guild, and Steve as well, and I just started writing, and it became the bug bit. And so that's become my new passion. My wife's greatest concern in my retirement is that I will hole up in the den and do nothing but write op-eds for the next 20 years plus. But... remains to be seen.
There are worse ways to spend your days, believe me.
Yes, there are. I would agree with that.
See, her concern is the income that comes in from op-eds is not quite what some other avenues may be.
You could write for a week, Bob, and then at the end of the week be able to buy yourself a plate of buffalo wings.
All right. Well, you know, there's that whole philosophy of write drunk, edit sober. I'm pretty sure that's what they're saying.
If it's not, it should be.
Yeah, there you go.
And Steve, what about yourself? Why don't you introduce yourself for our listeners?
So my name's Steve Leonard. Like Bob, I'm a career military officer. I retired at 28 years, and my last job in the military was I was the chief of operations for the Combined Arms Center at Fort Leavenworth. Little background, I was a senior military strategist throughout the last 15 years of my career, and along the way created something called Doctrine Man that kind of exploded beyond any expectations. It started off as something to pass the time amongst a small group of people in a cubicle farm, and got bigger and bigger, and then became something different. And you get beyond that. I discovered writing when I was in college. I was an engineer and discovered writing early on, and it was something that I followed my whole career. I made a promise to myself before I even came in the Army that I'd publish something every year, whether it be an article, whether it be something. And I stayed true to that throughout my whole career. So it's been a passion that, as Bob would say, it really doesn't pay a whole hell of a lot. I think I've sold one piece my whole career. But, you know, you follow the passion and you enjoy it. And it's a great way to, as I've always told people, that's how you really get a legacy. You know, I'm not going to be an NBA champion. I'm not going to be president. So I'm hoping that my writing will be something that's cited for years to come by somebody in a positive sense. Personally, I run the master's program in organizational leadership at the University of Kansas School of Business. I'm a non-resident fellow with the Modern War Institute at West Point. I'm also one of the founders of the Military Writers Guild, which is where my association with Bob and Phil come in. I'm also a recurring contributor to the Atlantic Council's Art of Future Warfare project. In my spare time, I've published 4 books that were filled with cartoons, 1 book that is filled with how to rebuild a country after a war, and then just a lot of odds and ends in between. And that, in a nutshell, is who I am.
Well, thank you. I have to say that everybody has very impressive backgrounds, and I also want to thank all of you for serving in the military and the Navy and keeping America great. Not to quote Trump, though, but yes, keeping America America, let's put it that way. And Steve, you mentioned the word passion a number of times when it comes to writing and writing pieces and a lot of the ideas that are featured in Divergent Options. There's this passion, and I think Sina can contest to this as well, that the Loopcast is a passion of ours. We do this out of the goodness of our hearts for fun. It's, you know, not a paying job either. It's something we love, and we love getting fantastic guests that talk about topics that they're passionate about. So I feel like we all share that passion in both of our projects. So it's fantastic to have you on. So why don't you? Yep, go ahead.
Chelsea, as you will find, an impressive resume comes from being a 30-year in your career type A person, which I'm sure someday both you and Sina will discover.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure, yes. I will put the floor over to you, and I will let one of you give us sort of the opening question of why did you start Divergent Options?
So I'll start with that, Chelsea. So October of last year, I read an article that on that was put out by an author who I respected then and I still respect now, who I will not name, who worked for an organization that I respected then and respected now and I will not name. But that author wrote an article that, despite the organization's kind of claim of being nonpartisan, I thought was very, very partisan. And it struck me as being very, very different from the norm of the things I had seen from both that organization and that author. And I kind of got a little bit fired up about it, a little bit probably too fired up than I should have been. And I had this idea come to me I thought, you know what we should do? I should start a website where, you know, we write things that, you know, examine a situation and examine options, but then at the end of it, never recommends anything. No matter what happens, we never, ever, ever make a recommendation. And we kind of force the reader to make their own choice. And so, and then on top of that, I had this vision in my mind of, based upon my experiences, you know, what do I know about the elements of a piece of paper that are put in front of a decision maker in Washington, D.C.? Well, generally they have a background paragraph. They have they describe the significance of the situation, and then they look at various options and risks and gains. And so I kind of, you know, I wanted to distill everything down, keep it at 1,000 words or less so that would increase the probability of someone reading it. I wanted to use a specific format so that it not only made our articles easy to write for our writers, because we do not pay any of our writers. They write for us out of the goodness of their hearts. And so we designed this format so that they could fill in like one heading a day for a week or so and then have it done in their spare time. And then I also wanted to make it so that our readers would always know where to find information instead of having to search through thousands and thousands of words for the bottom line or the point or the thesis statement. I wanted to kind of have a format that was very specific. And so I wanted to make things easy on readers and easy on writers and also not recommend anything and kind of force our readership to decide. And I thought this was a good idea. This may be a good idea, or it actually may be a horrible idea. And I was kind of originally leaning more towards horrible, because I had not seen any other website kind of doing this thing. Most were very free flow. Most were definitely longer than 1,000 words. And I didn't know if it would work or not. So I reached out to Steve in the Military Writers Guild, and I emailed him and I said, "Steve, I have this idea. I don't know if it's good. I don't know if it's bad, but I need your take on it because you've been doing this longer than I have." And at that point, I'll turn it over to Steve.
And so when Phil and I started to talk, it was literally, I'll confess that Phil's not the first person to throw an idea like that at me, but he was the first person to throw an idea at me that was as unique as this one. And having been a planner as long as I have, I'm used to this kind of a format, and I'm used to this kind of an approach to solving a problem. Let's look at the options. Let's weigh each option. Let's consider the benefits, the risks, the whole nine yards that goes with the evaluation process of those options. And that's how we always present things to senior leaders, whether they be political or military. That's just the way things go. Now, so when Phil throws this out at me, and you look at it, and I had to admit, I love the idea. I love the idea, if for no other reason than there isn't anybody else out there in the national security space who does this. There's people who write their opinions all day long, people who just say, "Hey, you know, we need to do this in Syria, we need to go do this in South Korea, North Korea, Iran, Iraq, wherever." Everybody's got an opinion, but nobody wants to take the time to lay out the options and really look at them. And then not recommend an option, just say, "Hey, here are the options available. Let's you yourself can consider the best option out there." And the uniqueness of that was something that hit me right away. And then probably the second thing that really struck me was, as word of Phil's idea started to spread, the amount of pushback we got indicated that Phil had really hit the sweet spot with an idea, because there were people that were, the pushback really represented people that were afraid of the competition within the national security space. And that was the confirmation that I think I needed, and I think Phil did too, to know that we'd hit on something that was a really great idea and had a tremendous amount of potential to move forward with. And I think that, in a nutshell, is the genesis of all of this. Phil?
And so Steve and I were kind of getting things rolling, and I was coming up with formats and emailing back and forth, but I've always been, you know, someone who wanted to try to get, you know, surround myself whenever possible by people who know a lot more than I do. And so I had already been blessed to have Steve come on board. And I said to Steve, I said, I think we need one more person on board, and I would really like to reach out to Bob Hine. And Bob and I had met through the Military Writers Guild. I had helped him edit an article. We had had coffee a couple times, and so I had been at a strategy event where Bob and I sat next to each other and had a really good time there. And I said, so I sent an email to Bob and I said, hey, Steve and I are doing this thing. Love for you to come on board. And take it away, Bob.
So when Phil initially called me, it was like I had, my first question to him was, okay, you understand, I'm retiring soon. After 30 years in the Navy, I'd love to do this, but you understand, I'm going to be hiking the Appalachian Trail for 6 months. You can deal with that, then we're good. And he said, absolutely, so I was all on board. As Steve had mentioned, you know, the working in the national security sphere, this is how we write. This is exactly what we do. And if you go out into the world of your general op-ed land and think tank land, you know, everybody's writing their piece, as Phil had mentioned, you know, trying to influence that national security discussion. And so when, on the flip side, where I live or have lived, you know, when you're trying to put together the options, you're looking, you know, across the board, you're trying to pull down various opinions and points of view. And there was nothing out there that actually in one paper laid out all the options or various options. And so it really did the work for you. As a writer, I found that the format is so much easier, because literally, you know, you can write a paragraph a day. You know, I got this topic, and then I can bang them out. And so it's for a writer, it's a much easier platform to use. And so it just made sense. And again, the uniqueness of it within the national security writing and op-ed sphere, really is a voice that those of us that need this kind of content was good. And so that's where I knew it was going to be a home run. Couldn't be happier to be part of this team.
And maybe you could describe to me the type of writers that you feature, because looking at the site and the different articles and the different bios on people, if they have bios, because you give them the option to be anonymous if they want to as well, but maybe describe some of the writers and their backgrounds, because it's very diverse.
So it's really interesting. As this was coming together, I had spoken with Steve, and I said, what's funny to me in the national security kind of blog website world is how there are a great number of websites who claim, you know, air quotes, we are looking for new voices. And it's funny because different people have different ideas of what a new voice is. So for some people, a new voice could be a, you know, 20-year military person at the rank of 05 who has a ton of experience but has never written and been published anywhere. And that person is a new voice. And so so some people may see, well, I'm a new voice, I've never written before. Then they submit to that publication and they get rejected because they're not really looking for new voices. They're looking for people who've never published before, but who have significant experience. Other websites are, you know, their version of a new voice could be anybody who has a certain background or a certain idea or something like that. So when we started Divergent Options, the biggest thing that we wanted to do was really focus on the idea instead of the pedigree or the race or sex or nationality or language or anything. And that those words are something that we tweet quite often, which is we value good ideas more than race, sex, nationality, language, or pedigree. You know, please, if you're interested, we encourage you to write for us, because what we want to focus on is the idea. My father, who's a retired Marine Corps Reserve Master Sergeant, used to always, you know, impress upon me at a young age, you know, there's no known correlation between genius and collar insignia. And that's always kind of stuck with, yeah, everybody's laughing about that. And that's always stuck with me. And so I really wanted Divergent Options to focus on the idea. And what's interesting is I had somebody recently email me, and they said, "I've never been to college. Is that okay? Can I write for Divergent Options?" And I just replied, I said, "I don't care that you've ever been to college. If you have a good idea, here's our format. Send it." And that person wrote a great article that'll be published in the coming weeks. And so, you know, I don't want to say use the phrase, you know, we welcome new voices. I just want to say we welcome good ideas, more so than anything. And now I'll kick it over to Steve.
Yeah, hey, I'd like to jump on that one, because the diversity of writers that we pull in is really important. And like Phil mentioned, you know, every outlet has its own pedigree and its own, I'm not sure what the right word is, but who they'll let write for them. And it doesn't always work. On my own personal blog, the most popular blog I ever post I ever ran was by a female lieutenant, a female minority lieutenant, who just wanted to write about how women are treated and how women are looked at within the military. Very junior, and nobody had any interest in what she had to say until I put it on Medium for her, and it exploded. And it gave her a voice that nobody else would give her. And by doing this, I mean, we can have experienced writers all day long, but it's the idea, like Phil said, it's the idea, not the pedigree, that's important. And if we don't give a voice to those great ideas, then, you know, shame on us for not at least attempting. And it may take a little bit more editing work in the end, and Phil is a fantastic editor, by the way, but it's worth it. It's really worth it. You know, even since we were sitting here, I had an email from somebody I've never heard of before asking, how do I break into writing? And there's so many people out there that have a voice, but they just don't know how to find it. And through Divergent Options, I think we've done a terrific job of giving those voices an outlet. And I think it's worked terrific for us. And with that, Bob?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but to sort of emphasize that point, like, I think Divergent Options is one of the first, like, blogs that I've seen that features a mix of security specialists, like especially your series on cybersecurity, like it's kind of blew my mind, because you actually having practitioners laying out options, like. For somebody, like, when you're in a technical field and then you read something like on foreign policy, and it's like it doesn't capture the nuance of the policy, it doesn't capture anything, and it doesn't really, like, you can tell that it's sort of somebody trying to understand the tech but also trying to enunciate a policy or recommend something. What I really like about Divergent Options is that, like, you have because it's not about pedigree, it's about ideas. You inevitably have attracted, like, people like Scott Turbin. Your article on Egypt, on OSINT Egypt, was excellent. And it was just like, you know, getting away from focusing on pedigree and just on the ideas. It's just, you know, it's simple, but also, like, mind-blowing, to be honest with you.
It's also risky. You know, because we're trying to do something, I think, that not a lot of people do. And there's a certain amount of risk in that. And I think from the get-go, we all agreed to accept that risk and let it take us where it might.
But, you know, going to Phil's point, though, of getting actual new voices is, you know, on the uniform side, senior leaders all the time scream for, hey, we need to bring in, you know, the young people, get new innovative ideas. but they never tell them what the means and the mechanism is in which to do that. And again, as you know, a lot of these national security publications and blogs are so hard to break into unless you've got the pedigree. You may have a great idea, but you may be, you know, a nascent writer, and you've always wanted to write it. Now you've got that opportunity. And so, you know, and see, just exactly as you said, you know, the ability for experienced writers, the full pedigree, but people that are just entering and they're like, wait a minute, I have a great idea. And that's, how do you beat that?
Have you featured international writers? Because I know all of you have huge careers that have taken place here in the States, but you are open to all writers. So what countries have you featured in your writers?
As far as non-U.S. writers, we've had folks from Egypt, and we have had quite a few from Australia, which has been great. But I have been trying to get – we've been trying to get more non-U.S. writers. I have sent several direct messages to followers who are not from the U.S. who – by their Twitter profile, looks like they have written before, inviting them to write for us. And kind of one of the jokes that I always throw out there as part of my invite to them is I always say, I am a 6 foot tall white male who lives in DC, and I am tired of my species dominating the national security space. And, you know, I always say that, and 100% of the time I get back a smile or a laugh. Or, yeah, man, I know what you mean. I really want not me writing for us whenever possible.
And maybe you could discuss this format of not including recommendations. And I know you touched on the main core of it, but I found that very interesting because, as we've mentioned in this talk already, the majority of products coming out of DC always have recommendations. So give our listeners more of an in-depth reason for this.
So I originally had the idea because I've been fortunate enough to hang out with quite a few veterans of the Department of Defense Office of Net Assessment, or ONA, which you probably have heard of because Andy Marshall started it. And there's a lot of really interesting thinking on issues that they have done over the years. And he retired a few years ago at like age 93. And so in hanging out with those folks, they had talked to me about how they generally diagnose issues but do not recommend. And that's that kind of got my mind wrapped around it. And then when I saw the original writer who kind of gave me the idea for this make a recommendation, as I observed that almost every national security website makes a recommendation of some kind, I wanted to refrain from that and, number one, let the reader decide, but then, number two, kind of force our writers to look at something beyond the original solution they had in their mind. I think a lot of people, when they write for national security websites, they walk in and they start to write and they know, I have an issue that I'm going to describe, and then I have a solution I'm going to provide. And we don't allow people to just provide one solution. And even if one of the options that somebody provides is a status quo type option, they still need to articulate what is the risk and what is the gain of maintaining the status quo? Because just as there is risk in action, there is risk in inaction as well. And we want to make sure that people note those costs. Steve, when I initially kind of had that idea, what was your take on it? What are your views on the lack of recommendation?
I think you really hit it, and we touched on it earlier, too. It's the idea that everybody makes recommendations in the national security space, and every recommendation carries a certain amount of bias. By stepping away from those recommendations and just presenting options, then you allow people to make their own choices and not be painted into a corner with somebody else's ideas or with somebody else's bias. So, you know, from the outset, I thought it was a great idea and a great way to approach problems.
And discuss the format again, because you do have a template that if someone decides they want to write for you, they have this template, which, as you mentioned earlier in the show, it very much for a reader makes it very easy to know exactly what's taking place in such and such a paragraph. And describe the format in more detail.
So overall, what the format does is it the first heading, it describes a national security situation, and then it displays the date that the article was written and then the date it was originally published, because eventually someday we're going to be republishing our archives. And so, you know, within the first, you know, 1 inch of white space on somebody's screen, I wanted them to see, okay, what am I reading about? When was this originally written? Because situations change. Information that was of value a week or a month ago may not be of value now. And so I want folks to very quickly be able to surmise what they're reading. In the next heading, we talk about this author and or article point of view, which is fun because when I originally designed the format, and Bob and Steve don't know this, I had kicked around with the idea of that heading saying, state your bias.
I love that.
Yeah, that's originally what I wanted to do, was state your bias. But state your bias, I felt, was going to be too limiting. And what I mean by that is it only has one use. So right now where we say author and or article point of view, so the author can write their point of view. You know, I am a retired military member. I believe in, you know, responsibility to protect, or I believe in any other, you know, foreign policy theory. But then the article point of view thing is really fun because we have had people adopt a completely different persona when they write. So one of our early articles we had as Mosul in Iraq began to be moved on to expel ISIL from there. We had a writer write from the point of view of the ISIL chief of strategy, who is briefing Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi on options once the town fell. Bob Hine has written a piece for us where he wrote from the Chinese point of view following the Taiwan Straits crisis in 1996, where he is briefing Chinese leadership on things that they can do to make sure the U.S. cannot ever move their ships where they moved during the Taiwan Strait crisis. So it gives a lot of different maneuver room for our authors, which I think is good. We then talk about the background and then the significance, because there are a lot of problems in the world, but they don't all, you know, we need to know what the significance is of that problem. And then we just go through option number one, where somebody describes something that could be done, and then they have to articulate risk and then gain, and then option number two, and then risk and then gain, and then they have an other comments area. And then the final thing that we end up with is recommendation none, which is funny because, and I think I talked specifically with Sina about it last week, because he had written an article and then somebody had reposted it on their website and had basically, as I assessed, they had said some bad things about it through a graphic that they posted. And basically their idea was, this article is horrible because they didn't make a recommendation. And so I found a way to contact the person. I emailed them and I said, hi, my name's Phil. I, you know, one of the three guys that runs Divergent Options. And I noted your disappointment and the lack of recommendation. Please do not be harsh towards the author, because lack of recommendation is what we do at our website. It is all we do. And then I got an email back that said, oh, got it. I fixed it. And then by the time I had emailed Sina said, I don't know what you're talking about. There's no negativity at all on the guy's website, which was pretty funny. So, and I know Steve, as you share our stuff on Facebook, don't you get an occasional strange reaction from people about the recommendation none?
You know, less so now than before. Initially, it was always a hey, what do you want? What are you thinking? What do you want us to do? What's the so what to it? Now I think people have kind of figured out the format and the approach, and aside from the occasional troll, it's just it's pretty good response overall.
Well, and the fun part is, you know, we don't get a lot of trolls, but whenever we do, you know, generally it's on Twitter, and I run our Twitter account, and so 100% of the time, kind of our policy is that our response to a troll is always, you know, thank you very much for your opinion. We look forward to receiving your 1,000 word essay.
That's
1,000 word article. And have so far,
ever, has anyone ever actually sent you one then?
Oh no. Oh no. No,
oh, definitely. That would be great.
Definitely not. And I've had to do that at least a dozen times. And, it just, every single time, it's thank you very much. We look forward to receiving your article.
Yeah. And then what are
awesome. Some... Awesome. Still attacked like a badger.
So what are some of the favorite issues that you've covered and why? I mean, it might, of course, be personal because it's your own interest, but let's hear some of the favorite topics that you've covered and that your writers have covered or the topics that you've suggested.
Well, we, as kind of we go along with our theme of, you know, we want to make things easy for our readers and for our writers. We, you know, Bob and Steve and I kind of planned out all of our call for papers, 13 months in advance, and we announced them all because we want to give potential writers as much time as possible to kind of plan their year if they want to write on one of our topics. And then, besides just the call for papers, you know, we have published a ton of stuff that has nothing to do with our call for papers, and that's great. That's absolutely perfect, and I love that stuff. We don't want to limit anyone. As far as the things that I've really liked, the first call for papers we did was for Syria, and we had some really neat articles come out of that. One that really stuck out at me was Ivana Hu's article, which focused on Chinese equities in the conflict in Syria, which was very, very good, and a perspective that I think was not generally written about at the time. The options in the South China Sea was really, really interesting, and I'll let Bob kind of talk more about that in a second as our representation from the sea services. And the options in cyberspace one has been really fun for me thus far because I don't know anything about cyber. So as I edited each of these papers, I had to go back and forth with our writers, some of them a few times where I said, okay, you know, break this paragraph down like someone has no idea what you're talking about. Which was always very good. Steve?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'm not sure I have a favorite yet. I kind of echo Phil's thoughts, and I've had fun with a lot of the different topic areas, and I think we're just starting to get warmed up. And I think for me, my favorite part of this whole thing isn't any particular issue. It's watching the interest and the momentum build from issue to issue to issue as more people discover the blog, more people discover the format, and more people jump on board and want to share it and talk about it and drive discussion. That's for my foxhole, that's been my favorite part of all of this.
And Bob, do you want to add anything to that?
Well, so what I'll add is the great thing is, as Phil has mentioned, you know, is there's the basic the criteria, basic topics that we have. And I've had a lot of fun with them. And the great thing is that you see the topic and all of a sudden in your mind, you immediately know, oh, well, he's talking about this. And this is what we must be thinking about. But then as the articles start to roll in, you realize people are thinking across an incredible array of different problems and the issues. And as Phil mentioned, with regard to the South China Sea topic, there has been just a tremendous amount written on that. But again, it's written by people that are, the China experts or the maritime naval China experts. And you get a lot of voices that just really haven't had that opportunity before. Matter of fact, we have a recent partnership with the Center for International Maritime Security, who's picking up a couple of the articles that were written from that series, just because of the fresh voices, the fresh perspectives, the ways of looking at things that really haven't had a lot of play before. And so the other piece, as Phil again had mentioned, was the, hey, you don't necessarily need to follow the topics. If you've got an issue, and there have been some issues that were like, wasn't even aware of, where people come out and say, this is what I've been working on for like 10 years, and nobody cares about it, and I'm not reading or hearing anything about it, but here's my perspective on it. And you're like, wow, never knew that was going on, but there's a lot there. It's fun. It really is, and it's a learning experience. And like Steve had mentioned, as the format continues to gain ground, you just get an incredible divergence of opinions and views and different ways of looking at the problem, which for national security experts and the people that are actually tasked with doing these things is really necessary.
Yeah, there was one article specifically that when I got an email about it, it had me, I don't want to say shocked, but it had me really intrigued and really happy as far as how our reach had been going, where there's a gentleman named Ian Strutt who is in Australia, and he wrote an article called Options for Bougainville Independence. And as a former Marine, of course I know where Bougainville is. It's an island in the South Pacific, and the Marine Corps was there in World War II. But I had not ever thought of it in my entire life because it's not a huge issue for me. But it turns out that there's significant mineral resources there, and China is trying to position itself. And he wrote a great article for us about something that I think many, many people were not focused on at all. And that was one of those things that was really, really neat to see.
And being someone that is also in a venture that is small, so Loopcast is myself and Sina pretty much, there are a lot of challenges and a lot of questions that come up when you're starting it as well as ongoing. So what have been some of the challenges that you've faced creating and keeping Divergent Options running?
So I'll start. The only challenge that I've seen so far, and Steve and Bob and I have been talking about this at length, and it'll lead to some things in the future, is and Bob hit this on the head really, really well with me recently. He said, as we were talking about ideas for the future and things like that, and Bob said, if you want to write for Divergent Options, you have to write for Divergent Options. And what Bob explained beyond that was that, most national security things, people will write an article and then shop it around. But with us, you can't do that because of our format. So it either has to be you seek us or we seek you. There's not really a shopping around type thing. So what we've been discussing is possibly opening up a second line of effort sometime in the future where we will have a format of some variety, but we will really allow our authors, our writers. Right now we have a part on our format where it just says background and significance. And we may develop something in the future where instead of having an options paper, we just have an analysis paper where someone in 1,000 words can deep dive the background and significance of a national security situation in a little bit more of a free flow, and then not even explore any options at all. But we're still trying to figure out amongst us how we want to do that. So that's kind of the only challenge, so to speak, that I've seen so far. With regarding what, kind of what Steve said earlier about, you know, pushback from people. When I was talking to a friend who's not involved in Divergent Options about some of the pushback we got in the beginning, one of the great one-liners he told me that I kind of have adopted and I use quite often is he said, you know, the flak is always heaviest when you're over the right target, which is something that I keep in mind quite often. So that's kind of my take on the challenges. Steve?
Yep. For me, I think the biggest challenge is, especially in the first year, is this is such a highly competitive space. There's no shortage of blogs and writers and thinkers in the NatSec space. And all of them have their own ideas, their own way of doing things. And so within that competitive space, you have to be both unique and fresh. And for us, the uniqueness of the format ensures that at least for the near term, that we don't have any competition with respect to how we present information, how we present those options. The freshness is always going to be a challenge. And I think both Bob and Phil talked about it pretty well earlier, saying that we may do a call for papers and give somebody 3 months of lead time to talk about what's happening on the lunar surface in 2020. But at the same time, if somebody has a hot topic like Bougainville, they can just throw it at us. And that ensures the freshness stays there. And as long as we're able to do those two things, those are the biggest challenges for us. And then the rest of it, you just have to allow things to evolve over time and let this take on a life of its own.
But one thing I think that we have a competitive advantage on, and I'm going to turn it over back to Phil in a second, is we have a secret weapon. You know, when you're trying to overcome the challenges and you're trying to figure out what the next step is, we have an advisory board that is probably second to none. Matter of fact, it's been claimed to be better staffed than the Pentagon at times. I'll let you explain what that means.
Yeah. So, along that theme of always surround yourself with people that are much, much smarter than you are, we assembled a 5-person kind of strategic advisory board to help, you know, kind of guide us and inspire us. And we are very fortunate to have Janine Davidson, who just recently stepped down as a 32nd Undersecretary of the Navy. We have Nathan Fryer from U.S. Army War College. We have Stephen Rosen from Harvard. We have Corey Shockey from the Hoover Institute, and we have Tamara Kaufman-Wittes from Brookings. And we engage with them about once a quarter, and they've been extremely helpful with ideas and connecting us with people. And, what we really try to be as respectful as we can of their time. And so when we all get together, we have an agenda that we go through, and they've been very, very helpful, and we have definitely appreciated it because it is something that they have been reimbursed via a Divergent Options coffee mug. So it's not like they are they're donating their time to us for a coffee mug. And
those,
so
those are highly sought after items. So Phil can't sell that thing enough. There are people crawling over the shelves looking for those things, and they're rare and hard to find.
They are. I mean, trying to find Zazzle.com is very challenging. It's very challenging.
But it's worth the effort.
It is. And all products were designed by Steve Leonard himself.
Very nice. Very nice. It's always good to have a coffee mug on your desk. And, you know, you pick up your coffee, or in my case, tea, because I'm a tea lover. And you see that logo, it's always good. So I completely condone and thumbs up for coffee mugs.
and the extra large coffee mug is something that I ensured was there because I have a gigantic like 28-ounce coffee mug that I drink from every morning. And when Steve put the store together, I said, we need to have one of those gigantic ones. And so,
apparently it's not legal in all states.
Apparently not.
Yeah.
So maybe we could bring this talk a little bit to the direction of writing for Divergent Options, because both Sina and myself have had the honor to write an article for the website. So Sina, do you want to explain your experience writing for this site?
Sure. So I think with the reason I wanted to write for your site was starting off, like it was like in the InfoSec community, there's a discussion about how to deal with information warfare and information operations in the sense of like post-Snowden, post-WikiLeaks. You know, how do you deal with not just insider threats, but people who essentially make public data that is true, and really, you know, the operation becomes about spinning and explaining and sort of marginalizing a narrative. And having come from humanities and poli sci, and then getting into tech, my personal leaning was sort of reviving the U.S. Information agencies, sort of a Cold War leftover. And in the course of sort of researching Divergent Options, like for this paper, it just got me thinking about not only the limitations, the historical limitations. So being able to say, to enunciate risks, forced me to research deeper into what the U.S. information agency was, or, you know, can be. But also like sort of canvassing the community and thinking about what have other people have said. And if you go through and read that paper, there's two other options. One is sort of reviving a group from the 80s, the Active Measures Working Group. And then the third option was basically, you know, doing what WikiLeaks did or whoever, and hacking and doxing and dumping data. But in the course of like writing this, I, you know, being able to explain a policy or explain an option is one thing, but also being able to explain the risks and, you know, if you bring back a U.S. information agency, you know, one of the risks is how does that fit in with, you know, Cyber Command, the Broadcasting Board of Governors, the State Department, like thinking about an issue complexly and not just arguing for one thing without understanding it three and four dimensionally. Which I really like. Like I just, like I, as I said at the top of the show, I think, you know, critical thought is sort of a dying art, and it's, you know, in my personal experience, I feel like it's more conducted in private than in public, and in public is where we really need it, to be honest. But that was my experience. What about you, Chelsea?
So Phil actually came to me and said, "Hey, I've got this great venture," and it was for, I guess, your first issue on Syria, Iraq, and everything going on in that region. And I, of course, said, yes, this will be awesome. Initially, we had a different idea, but because of other research-related issues and funding from some of the research I'm doing, it got very complicated. So we came up with another idea, and it was looking at options for Syrian refugees if they were going to return back to Syria. And to be honest, being someone that loves to write and tending to write very long pieces, I will just put it out there that the 1,000-word format was probably the hardest thing for me to do, because I'm used to writing these long papers that we were discussing that majority of people don't read all of them and read them straight from cover to back. So it was challenging in that sense for me, but I love it because I love challenges. And I love the format with the various options and explaining the issue and the gains or possible losses depending on the topic. And so I just found it challenging will be the first way of describing it. It did make me think very differently about an issue and how I was writing it, because you do have a limited amount of space within the 1,000-word limit. So it makes you as a writer look at something very differently, and you analyze it differently. You are very precise on your wording because you have this limit. So I loved it because it was a challenge. And I will second, I think it was Steve that mentioned at the starting of the show that Phil is a great editor, and Phil was my editor, and I will definitely second that because it was fantastic working with Phil. He's very easygoing. I would say Phil is probably the one of the quickest responders too. It's not one of these things that you send something off and it takes weeks and weeks and weeks to hear back, which a lot of other publication arenas have that downside to them. So with Divergent Options, the turnaround was very quick. Editing was very quick. Suggestions, if there were suggestions. So it was really a pleasure to work with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Chelsea. So, well, what's funny is I never planned this out as far as the editing piece, and having the 1,000 word cap and the format really makes it so I can edit things pretty quick because I'm not really looking at a whole bunch of things. And I've had times before where it's taking me longer to kind of organize the end notes into the format that we use. It took me longer to do that than it did to actually provide substantive edits. And really, a lot of the edits that we provide, I don't think are necessarily that substantive. And you know, I think I've mentioned before to Steve and Bob is, you know, at the end of the day, we want to be nice, and I would rather have a writer walk away from Divergent Options having had a positive experience with us, and as an editor, I will, you know, I've had times before where I've changed something and then sent it back to the author, and the author rejected the edit, and that's perfectly fine. I have no problem with that at all. And so we've had that before where I'd rather have that person walk away thinking, oh, that was a good experience, and then come back and write again than, you know, prove to them that I am the all-powerful editor and you will bend to my will, or you will go write for some other website, because that is definitely not the person I want to be, because I've met those people before and I've been on the receiving end of their power trip, and that's not going to be Divergent Options.
Yes, I'm sure everybody in this discussion, since we're all writers, has had that experience, and it can be very unpleasant at times, and you have to have a very strong personality to just sort of say, okay, I will try this somewhere else.
Yes.
So to wrap up the show, I have a question, and I will put it out to all three of you because I think you might have a similar response, or it might be different depending on your visions for Divergent Options, but what do you see for the future?
So if my world were perfect, we would continue to do 2 articles a week. I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that. If we can, that's great. If not, we will publish what we can when we can, and that'll be fine too. So that's kind of my overarching thing, is I just want to be able to sustain the pace we've had thus far. But we'll see how that goes. Steve?
And I'd echo what Phil said. You know, we talk about this infrequently, but when we do talk about it, it's the same thing that comes up. And that's the idea that we want to continue with the 2 articles a week. And beyond that, just kind of see how things play out and where they go. This is a space that's ever-changing, it's ever-evolving, and so I'll go back to the 2 things that I said earlier, which was, as long as you're unique and as long as you're fresh, you can survive and thrive in this space. And so it's really important to do those 2 things, and where they lead you, you just kind of got to go with the flow and see how things go. And occasionally try a new idea and float it and see if it works, but for the most part, I think we'll continue to drive on the way we're doing and just see how it goes from there. Bob?
So what I hope happens is where this takes off is with those nascent new writers, you know, and as those kids that are doing their PhDs at King's College or their masters at Harvard, the NHTSA School or Georgetown, and they're working on their projects, realize, and they're passionate about their topic, and they realize that the options, that the possible solutions that could happen, and they will turn them out and crank them out and say, okay, I have a voice and I need to get it out, and Divergent Options is the place for them to go. While at the same time, is those folks within the military that are just discouraged from writing because, you know, well, they've been for 20, 25, 30 years and have never written anything and are concerned about just, you know, the editorial process or the, hey, you've kicked it back to me and I really don't have time to shop it around. And I've, you know, and so understanding the Divergent Options will be that venue whereby those nascent writers, those new writers, depending on and every potential definition of what a new writer is, feels that this is their home. That's how I see it.
So I would like to give all of you again the moment to maybe have a last say, or if there's something we haven't touched on in this talk, just go for it, because this has been really, really fun. I've enjoyed having all of you on and hearing about your venture and how everything started and the future and the funny stories. But let me just give you this time to maybe say something that is on your mind that we just haven't had the time to touch on.
Yeah, so I'll just kind of say what I always say on Twitter, which is to our writers, thank you. We would not be here without you, period, full stop. We would not have Divergent Options unless we had these amazing people who take time away from family, friends, hobbies, sleep, whatever, and they put their fingers on the keyboard and they choose to spend time writing with us. So thank you to our writers. For people that are listening to this, please consider writing for us. I promise you it'll be a very positive experience. We want to get your ideas out there. If no matter where you're from, no matter what you're doing, if you've got a national security related idea, we'd love to hear from you. Again, ideas matter, not pedigree. If you don't speak English, we'll find a translator. You know, get in touch with us. Please, please do. Steve.
I would just double down on what Phil said, that we have a venue, we have an outlet. If you have ideas, you need a voice, we're here to help you, and we won't let anything get in the way of that. Other than that, Bob?
So I would point to more than just the writers, though, to the readers and actually the people that are working in the national security sphere. As you are grinding through those problems, those unsolvable problems that you get every day, and trying to find solutions to your problems, Divergent Options already has or soon will give you a list of options in which to solve those problems. And you get to pick the recommendation.
Well, I just want to once again thank you for all being here this evening. It's a Sunday evening, and you've all decided to spend it on the Loopcast talking about Divergent Options. So I really appreciate you doing this, and I'm sure our listeners are really going to enjoy hearing about this.
I hope so. Thank you so much for having us on, Chelsea.